And just because he said that there was weapons hidden under pigsties over there, just because my boy may never make it home again, don't mean he don't care.
This is WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Small businesses and the self-employed in Kentucky are worried about a $40 million shortfall affecting one of the state-approved companies that handles workers' compensation insurance. AIK Comp, whose board of trustees is controlled by Kentucky's largest business trade association, recently announced that for the last several years it had offered insurance premiums at a loss in hopes of attracting more customers. However, the plan backfired, leading to the cash crunch, and now AIK wants to retroactively charge clients in order to make up for the money. The proposal would hit some 5,000 policyholders hard, many of whom say such a one-time blast could bankrupt them. Kentucky's Department of Workers' Claims held a hearing on AIK's conundrum this week and is expected to rule on its fee request sometime this month.
On Thursday, 37,000 Illinois government workers, represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, voted to ratify a new four-year contract with the state. Winning by a 4-1 margin, the labor agreement gives union workers gross salary increases every 6 months starting next year. However, under the new contract, workers will be required to pay more for health care. Unusual for most labor deals, beginning in the third year, the state health insurance plan will be expanded to let employees enroll their same-sex domestic partners for vision, dental, and health care benefits.
A federal court has applied brakes to the plan of some Amtrak employees to stage a walkout. Amtrak union members intended to walk off the job to protest what they have called the underfunding of the passenger railroad. A federal law bans rail workers from striking, but the employees argued that the law would not apply because they would be committing a political action, not striking over negotiations of pay or working conditions. The court concluded that the law prohibits any action that would have the consequences of a strike and noted that the Amtrak unions are currently negotiating with the railroad over new contracts. Congress gave Amtrak $600 million less than the $1.8 billion the railroad said it needed to meet operating costs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A.com is now the largest employer in Afghanistan. You heard that right. The online discount retailer Overstock.com now buys crafts from more than 1,500 Afghan peace workers who are paid about 70 cents for every dollar a customer spends on their handmade rugs, jewelry, and clothing items. Afghan craft workers for Overstock.com are estimated to make an average of about $50 per month. The previously largest employer in Afghanistan was a brick factory in Herat, which has about 400 on its payroll.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
When you lift a log, you never know what kind of ugly squirmies you'll find underneath. Representative Chris Bell, a Houston Democrat, recently lifted a big one in Congress when he filed an ethics complaint against House Republican leader Tom DeLay. The first ugly squirmies were the details of DeLay's corruption, including everything from bribery to the abuse of power. DeLay, who controls the flow of legislation in the House, is not shy about demanding millions of dollars in political funds from corporate lobbyists, telling them that they must pay the piper if they want their special interest bills to move. But Bell uncovered other squirmies, too. In particular, he showed that Congress's own ethics process has been corrupted. Interestingly, Bell's filing against DeLay was the first ethics complaint since 1997. Why? Because the Ethics Committee has effectively been put beyond the reach of those who might dare bring charges against any member of the cozy congressional club, especially against any of the leaders. In 1997, House leaders quietly barred outsiders from filing charges against unethical behavior. No public interest groups, no citizen watchdogs, no hometown constituents, no media outlets are allowed now to challenge a Congress critter's behavior. Only members of Congress themselves can file ethics charges. But then the leaders of both parties did something else. They agreed to an unofficial truce, promising that they would not file any complaints against each other. Convenient, huh? This is the truce that Bell broke. In part, he might have had the gumption to stand up to the system because he has nothing to lose or gain by it. He lost his re-election bid in the March primary, so he's a lame duck. This is Jim Hightower saying, now the leaders are rushing to stop any future Bells from breaking open their tightly closed system. A top Tom DeLay lieutenant says he wants a new rule prohibiting lame duck members from filing ethics complaints.
Tune in tonight to Hangouts, where you'll meet a pop star with a pool for a living room.
Sorry to interrupt, but why check out other people's dream homes when you can use a home equity loan to create your own? Now at LendingTree.com, you can find home equity rates as low as 3.75% APR. But they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. Or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
38%. 46%. 42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy July 5th. Yes, it's Monday. It's the official 4th of July holiday. That is, for most... It was interesting going out this morning to pick up the newspaper. We live on a fairly busy street, and it was just absolutely silent. It's really kind of nice in a way, you know. Anyhow, we're live and on the air today here on the 5th of July. 120 days until regime change happens here in the United States. 120 days until our elections. And a lot of interesting things to talk about, a lot of interesting things in the news. But I think, you know, we'll start out with...
Dizzy.
Yeah, it's our Bush flip-flop of the day. Bush supports mandatory caps on carbon dioxide. When running for office, if elected, I will work to establish mandatory reduction targets for emissions of four main pollutants, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, mercury, and carbon dioxide. That 92900. But then once he was elected president, he decided to flip-flop. As he wrote in a letter to Senator Chuck Hagel, on March 13th of last year, I do not believe, however... said George W., that the government should impose on power plants mandatory emission reductions for carbon dioxide, which is not a pollutant under the Clean Air Act. Yes, our flip-flop of the day. Hey, just trying to keep track of George's flip-flops can do that to you. Anyhow, 9 minutes after the hour, the Patriots Act. I thought this was a really nice piece. The L.A. Times published this op-ed piece by Michael Moore, in which he talks about how he shares what I think, frankly, is the common experience for most of us who grew up in the 50s and the early 60s. You know, who were kids in the 1950s. I think I'm probably the same age as Michael Moore. And it really kind of gets to, in some ways, our quote for the day, by the way, which is from Teddy Roosevelt. On May 17th, 1918, he said, President Theodore Roosevelt, He was quoted in the Kansas City Star as saying, now this was during World War I, right, when people said, oh, don't speak out against the government or the president because that's anti-patriotic and that's not patriotic. And Roosevelt said to announce that there must be no criticism of the president or that we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. President Teddy Roosevelt, in the context of speaking against the United States at war. Anyhow, Michael Moore talks about his experience growing up as a kid in the 50s and 60s. And says, you know, as a young boy, I loved the American flag. And talks about, you know, how it wasn't, and, you know, he was a scout and all that stuff. And he says, that, you know, it wasn't until he was in high school. And this was my experience as well. Or early college, anyway, when it became obvious that our friends were coming back dead from Vietnam, and we couldn't figure out why they were there in the first place, other than this odd thing about, well, we've got to stop the rest of Southeast Asia from going communist. Like, why? You know, well, Laos is going to go communist. Well, it turned out they did, ultimately. Interestingly, Cambodia went communist. It was the Vietnamese who stopped Pol Pot after he had slaughtered a million of his own people. But it wasn't us. It was the Vietnamese, after we had left, who stopped him. But in any case, we had this strange notion, the domino theory, that just didn't seem like, well, you know, George Washington in his farewell address, you know, beware of foreign entanglements. And it certainly was one. And he talks, and Moore talks about how the flag has been hijacked. How actually many of us in the 60s and 70s came to, or began to think of the flag perhaps as a symbol of America gone wrong. You know, gone into Vietnam. And then Watergate. And Richard Nixon trying to wrap himself in the flag. And Lyndon Johnson wrapping himself in the flag. And all these, you know, opportunists wrapping themselves in the flag. And now you've got, you know, George Bush and Dick Cheney and all the neocons and, you know, giving away America to the highest bidder. Incredibly corrupt politicians like Tom DeLay, Bill Frist, wrapping themselves in the flag while at the same time they're making sure that their corporate cronies who funnel millions into their campaign funds or those of their party are the beneficiaries of the majority of the legislation that's passed. And then Moore says, I think it's time for those of us who love this country and everything it should stand for to reclaim our flag from those who would use it to crush rights and freedoms both here at home and overseas. We need to redefine what it means to be a proud American. I remember right after 9/11, I was speaking in a church in Los Angeles. It was the, I forget the name of the church now. Anyhow, it was a fairly large church. I think there was about 1,000 people there. And the pastor of the church was one of the people who had been with me on this trip to India 3 years before that to meet with the Dalai Lama. And anyhow, it was right after 9/11, and one of the people in the congregation gave me a little metal U.S. flag and said, why don't you put that on your lapel? And I did. And I got up in front of the group and I said, you know, I just put a flag on my lapel and I haven't done that in a while. And I talked about it. You know, I think it really is and truly is time for us to reclaim the flag. And it was interesting, about a month later, maybe 2 months later, there was an op-ed piece, I believe it was by Bill Moyers, saying that he was starting to wear a flag. And because it is not the exclusive property of those who think that to be a loyal American means to declare war on other countries or to sell out to the to huge corporations. So, you know, I think this is really an important time for us.
for all of us, for all Americans. It's a very important time. And it's an important time to reclaim the flag. It's an important time to claim it back. And to look at America unflinchingly and say, you know, there are, as I've said so many times in this program, there are so many extraordinary and wonderful things about this country, and particularly the ideals upon which it was founded, that have inspired now over 100 other nations to imitate our experiment that was started in 1776. On the day that, you know, today we legally have the anniversary of. And we also have some challenges. We have some work to do. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, is our telephone number if you'd like to weigh in or share your thoughts with us on this Independence Day, this July 4th holiday. July 5th it is, but it's the July 4th official holiday. And Ken in Long Beach, California is on the line, one of our serious listeners. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Oh, good to talk to you, Tom. I know you're good on labor issues and stuff. I was wondering what you think. I'm a truck driver myself, and I'm hearing now that the Supreme Court has lifted the ban on all these Mexican trucks. Now, I'm not talking about Mexican-Americans now. I'm talking about Mexican nationals that work for like 50 cents an hour. Yep. Are going to be actually driving in this country. Isn't that against the minimum wage laws? Not that that means anything to the Bush administration, I guess.
Yeah.
You're going to have people actually, not third world workers, but you're going to be looking up at a guy that's actually working here in this country now. I mean, it's like they're getting their foot in the door with this, with these Mexican trucks. That besides being the trucks being unsafe, that's another issue. You know, the trucks are allowed to pollute, I guess, all they want. We have to follow pollution, of course, controls and regulations, but evidently Bush doesn't care about that for them. They can come in. Theoretically, they're supposed to be allowed to bring things in, and I guess they're allowed to go back, theoretically. Of course, that's not going to happen. That's not what I think is going
to
happen.
Yeah, it used to be, up until just very recently, it used to be that they could come up to the border or perhaps just a little over the border and then deliver their cargo to a U.S. trucker.
That's what I used to do. I used to pick. Right. Of course, according to Bush, we don't, you know, these are jobs that Americans don't want, you know, like me. I've made a living on it for years. You know, it's going to be, they say, more efficient this way. More efficient for who?
Well, see, that's the bottom line. I mean, the conservative agenda translates very neatly into two words, cheap labor. And
yeah.
Virtually everything they do boils down to that, cheap labor. And, yeah, I mean, there's some the moral and religious stuff that, you know, to drag along enough people to put them into power. But basically, the core tenet is cheap labor. And this ratification, I'm as outraged as you are, Ken. I think it's terrible for a number of reasons. Number one, it's another whack at labor in the United States.
Uh-huh.
I am a protectionist. I do believe that every nation has a responsibility.
Good. It's much maligned.
There you go. Every nation has a responsibility to protect its own middle class, because without a middle class, you're not going to have a democracy.
In fact, Abraham Lincoln, he was considered an economic genius because he put in, most people think of the Civil War, but he think Abraham Lincoln, this is to a lot of Republicans out there, I happen to be a Republican myself, I guess, because, I don't know, moral issues and things, I'm in agreement with the Republicans, but gee, on economic issues, I'm just afraid of becoming poor, you know, with them running things. But anyway, Abraham Lincoln put in very high protectionist legislation at that time, which most people agree propelled America. By the turn of the century, by 1900, between 1865 and 1900, we became the number one economic power in the world. So if free trade is so great, how come we became a number one power with protectionism?
Well, and every other nation does, too. I mean,
still does today.
Oh, there was an article in the paper on Sunday about how the farmers in the Midwest are hoping that China will reduce their import tariffs on corn so that they can sell more corn to China, because right now China is trying to encourage its own domestic corn production. They've got import tariffs. I mean, and this is the country that we've got this huge trade deficit with. I mean, it's just,
that's,
you know,
the only
it's
thing
like,
we sell these days, though, now. You know, we're becoming a nation of...
we're a third world nation.
Yeah, agriculture and raw materials,
yeah,
with no manufacturing.
Yeah, that's what third world nations
computers
do.
It used to be the big... they used to chime in, well, we're going to be the tech country, you know. We're going to be all computer... people or something, I guess, because we're, you know, we're white people or something. I don't know. But, you know, even those jobs are being exported overseas.
No, this is the conservative agenda, Ken. Then the bottom line is cheap labor. You know, it's the beginning and the end of it. And, you know, and in the midst of this, we've got, you know, 1 in 6 children in America living in poverty, 40 million Americans who are functional illiterates. The bulk of the jobs being created right now are low and minimum wage. You know,
my wages haven't gone up in 20 years. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
My boss's wages have gone through the sky.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Through the roof.
Through
but
the
my
roof.
Wages have been basically standing still. They haven't actually been going down. I'd say, you know, you get like a 1% increase a year or something like that.
Yeah. No doubt about it. Ken, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. I'm 24 and a half, or three quarters. It's the 5th of July, 120 days until the elections. And we are live broadcasting coast to coast, border to border, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, on radio stations from coast to coast. By the way, welcome to WRVC in Huntington, West Virginia. News station starts today. Greetings to the Tri-State's home for news, sports, and talk. Covering West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio. And very pleased to have you with us. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Michael Moore makes this note. He says, I can't think of a more American thing to do than raise questions and demand truthful answers when our leader wants to send our sons and daughters off to die in a war. If we don't do that, the bare minimum for those who offer to defend our country, then we have failed them and ourselves. They offer to die for us if necessary so we can be free. All they ask in return is that we never send them into harm's way unless it is absolutely necessary. And with this war, we have broken faith with our troops by sending them off to be killed and maimed for wrong and immoral reasons. And now we learn today that the Pentagon has gone around the Department of Defense and released the statistic that 16,000 Americans have been wounded now, maimed, injured, wounded in Iraq, not the 3,000 or 4,000 that we had been led to believe. 16,000. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Roberta, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Roberta, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. And amen, amen to you and Michael Moore for your suggestions about the flag, to which I wish to add my own thoughts on that. But I want to thank you again for being so keeping the Fourth Estate so lively, stimulating, and entertaining on your truth mission. About the flag, you know, it occurs to me, I wonder if anyone thinks that the 13 colonies are the most profound base of it. And did the Republic start to corrode when the 13 colonies started to grow egregiously under Manifest Destiny? Probably first with the Louisiana Purchase and then, you know, go, go, go. I mean, the former.
Well, I'm not sure that you can do. I don't think you can blame the. Sorry, I thought you were asking me a question.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
I don't think you can blame the Louisiana Purchase on Manifest Destiny. I don't think that Jefferson was a believer in Manifest Destiny. I think he was just taking advantage of the fact that Napoleon was in a bind. I mean, you know, he bought it. He bought the Louisiana Purchase was like 4 cents an acre or something. I mean, it was just there was this opportunity because Napoleon was just, you know, hanging on by his fingernails.
Do you know why? Why did the Sons of Liberty, or the early freedom fighters, invade Quebec, a French province, rather than, you know, I'm still amazed that the United States hasn't tried to usurp Canada and annex Canada, so there must be a...
You don't think we already have?
Hmm?
You don't think we have? I mean, a lot of Canadians think we have. I mean, it's our culture has invaded them. The conservatives there in Canada now are taking their sound bites and their talking notes from conservative think tanks here in the United States.
It is insidiously happening. Well,
our brands are there. I mean, there's McDonald's from coast to coast, Coca-Cola.
Why did the early settlers, though, invade Quebec, Benedict Arnold and the rest?
I don't know. I don't,
The French were our best allies, we couldn't have succeeded without the money from King Louis.
Yeah, are you talking about the French and Indian Wars back?
Was that what it was?
That was before the Revolution. That was like 30, 40 years before the Revolution.
Well, Benedict Arnold was involved.
Roberta, I'm sorry, I don't know.
It's
a point in time, I don't know.
To, if I may, Tom.
I think we're out of time here.
Okay. Well, thank you, and have a good day.
Okay, thanks for calling, Roberta. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 and a half minutes past the hour. Now it's 29 minutes past the hour, yeah. Exposing the con and conservative on the 4th of July. Well, the 5th of July, the official 4th of July holiday. Stick around. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Small businesses and the self-employed in Kentucky are worried about a $40 million shortfall affecting one of the state-approved companies that handles workers' compensation insurance. AIK Comp, whose board of trustees is controlled by Kentucky's largest business trade association, recently announced that for the last several years it had offered insurance premiums at a loss in hopes of attracting more customers. However, the plan backfired, leading to the cash crunch, and now AIK wants to retroactively charge clients in order to make up for the money. The proposal would hit some 5,000 policyholders hard, many of whom say such a one-time blast could bankrupt them. Kentucky's Department of Workers' Claims held a hearing on AIK's conundrum this week and is expected to rule on its fee request sometime this month.
On Thursday, 37,000 Illinois government workers, represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, voted to ratify a new four-year contract with the state. Winning by a 4-to-1 margin, the labor agreement gives union workers gross salary increases every 6 months starting next year. However, under the new contract, workers will be required to pay more for health care. Unusual for most labor deals, beginning in the third year, the state health insurance plan will be expanded to let employees enroll their same-sex domestic partners for vision, dental, and health care benefits.
A federal court has applied brakes to the plan of some Amtrak employees to stage a walkout. Amtrak union members intended to walk off the job to protest what they have called the underfunding of the passenger railroad. A federal law bans rail workers from striking, but the employees argued that the law would not apply because they would be committing a political action, not striking over negotiations of pay or working conditions. The court concluded that the law prohibits any action that would have the consequences of a strike and noted that the Amtrak unions are currently negotiating with the railroad over new contracts. Congress gave Amtrak $600 million less than the $1.8 billion the railroad said it needed to meet operating costs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A .com is now the largest employer in Afghanistan. You heard that right. The online discount retailer Overstock.com now buys crafts from more than 1,500 Afghan peace workers who are paid about 70 cents for every dollar a customer spends on their handmade rugs, jewelry, and clothing items. Afghan craft workers for Overstock.com are estimated to make an average of about $50 per month. The previously largest employer in Afghanistan was a brick factory in Herat, which has about 400 on its payroll.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. Maine 451 in our chat room corrects me. The French and Indian War was only 8 years before the Revolution. Thank you. Always good to keep the facts straight here. If you want to drop into our chat room, by the way, where you will find one of the most erudite, interesting, fascinating group of folks in all of cyberspace, people drop in from literally all over the world. We haven't gotten anybody from outer space yet, but, well, you never know, actually. Maybe that Coach Glenn guy is actually an alien.
Anyhow, if you want to drop into our chat room, go to www.tomhartmann.com and just click on the live chat link. It'll drop you into there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you would like to participate in the program. 85% of young American adults cannot find Iraq on a map. 3 billion people on the planet don't have access to clean drinking water, and yet we could provide it to all 3 billion of them for less money than we've spent so far on the war in Iraq. Where are our priorities? It's very, very strange. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Alan in Dallas, Texas is on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Yes, I've got a question, I think a simple question I ask you.
Sure.
I was wondering if you would think that democracy is in the middle ground between corporatism and communism?
Well, democracy is a political system. Corporatism, as defined by Mussolini, is a political system, and communism is theoretically an economic system. So it's difficult to, you know, I don't think that there's a clean axis there that you can say, okay, here's a line, and this drops onto that line. What is there a question behind the question?
Oh no, I was just reading about the systems last night, and I was just trying to figure out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the idea of communism as originally envisioned by Marx was that number one, that everybody collectively would own everything. In other words, the state owns all means of production and distribution. And number two, that everybody would work to the extent of their ability and would receive from the state whatever they needed. And we know that this works in small communities. It's how most tribes are organized. It's how the kibbutzes in Israel work. But once you get beyond about 150 people, it starts to break down, and it doesn't work. So it's a nice ideal, but I think the Soviet Union demonstrated pretty accurately that it didn't work, and deteriorated into a cult of dictatorship, essentially. There's that economic system. On the other end of the spectrum of the economic system, you've got laissez-faire capitalism, which is, kind of the libertarian ideal, which is where the state plays no role whatsoever in how business is conducted, and business can do whatever it wants. And the historic parallel to that is what's called feudalism, where the feudal lords basically run everything. But there's really never been an example of that in a pure state in the history of the world, because people have always rebelled against it. People have always said, no, we've got to have some form of government to restrain, you know, the wealth or the wealthy from harming us. And so, you know, when the founders put together American democracy, they put some very strict limits on business activity. They said, you know, it's wonderful if you want to make money. In fact, we're going to help you. We're going to put into place tariffs and laws to protect you, to encourage you. But if you're going to play the game of business, you got to do it in a way that first and foremost helps society, you know, helps America. And when you do, and when you engage in the game of business in ways that harm America, then we're going to stop you, or we're going to put you out of business. And that's the whole point of regulations. And you know, if it's harming us, you know, the FDA, the USDA, things like that. So I suppose you could say that the one dimension of the form of democracy that we have in the United States is somewhere in the middle there between absolute, total laissez-faire capitalism and communism. But it's, I don't know, it's a tough one. I'd rather just view democracy as its own thing rather than on part of that spectrum. I don't know if I'm making sense here, Alan, or answering your question.
I appreciate it. That sounds real good.
Okay. All righty. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Joe in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Wanted to give my quick 2 cents about Kerry's vice presidential choice, which hopefully will be coming up by the end of the week.
Yeah, I'm guessing, you know, today or tomorrow or something like that. You know,
yeah.
It's early in the news cycle here.
I really think he should choose Edwards for several reasons. First of all, between Edwards and Gephardt, Kerry himself does not really connect with African-American voters particularly well. I mean, he's not horrible, but it's not a strong bond. And Gephardt doesn't either, where Edwards does have that kind of Clintonian...
Well, he grew up in the South, and he's a kid of the middle class or the lower middle class, and you know his father worked in a clothing mill. He gets it, what it's like,
yeah.
You know, to yeah.
and also that Gephardt was a relatively strong supporter of the war in Iraq, whereas, I don't know, I think Edwards, because he was from the South, he probably voted along with it, but Gephardt was definitely on the almost pro-war side. So I feel, for several reasons, I think Edwards would be the definitely the better candidate.
Yeah, although I have to say, Joe, now that it's becoming increasingly evident, in fact, we're going to get into this in some detail in the second hour of the program, how extraordinarily we were lied to, and not just you and me, we the people were lied to by this administration about, you know, what Iraq was all about and what kind of threat they represented. They didn't just lie to us. They lied to the Senate. They lied to the House of Representatives. They lied to our allies. And, you know, and they lied before the United Nations. And all of that together, you know, given the reality of that, I'm willing to give people who in the House and Senate supported at least that initial piece of legislation that, you know, Kerry's always taken to task for signing, the authorization. I'm willing to get, you know, to cut them some slack on that. I think if I was in office and the intelligence that the administration is feeding me says, hey, you know, here's a real threat, it would be very difficult to go up against it. On the other hand, you read the speeches of Robert Byrd from that time. And, you know, keep in mind, this was October. And this was the October surprise for the 2002 elections. This was a way, this was Karl Rove's way of politicizing the November 2002 elections so that Republicans would get an upper hand. And so there were, you know, there were political considerations, there were national security considerations. People didn't have the information to challenge the administration, so when people did, like Robert Byrd did, he was ridiculed. He had all the right-wing commentators, you know, calling him names and things, so... You know, if somebody voted for that early on, I'm willing to cut them some slack right now in retrospect because, you know, we were all lied to. And what's amazing is that they're continuing to lie to us and that they've even recently come out with a set of guidelines about how to lie to us. I don't know if you saw now Bill Moyer's Now program, but, you know, well, as I said, we'll get into that in the second hour. Anyhow, Michael Moore's comment here. Are you proud of asking your fellow Americans to live on $5.15 an hour? I mean, if we're proud to be an American, let's clean this place up. Let's make this country work again. Let's make it a place where, you know, broadly everybody says, yes, I'm proud to be an American. Let's not just create low and minimum wage jobs. Let's rebuild the middle class. I believe it was Allen and Dallas. No, it was Ken in Long Beach, I think, who mentioned Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was the first U.S. president to use the word strike and to support the rights of workers to strike. There was a strike action. I forget which state it was in now. It was somewhere in the Midwest. Illinois comes to mind. I could be wrong. While Lincoln was president, toward the end of his, in the maybe 6 months, 8 months, a year before he was assassinated, where there was a big strike action, and there had arisen a number of private security companies. Some of the larger ones today actually started out, at least one of them, started out back in the 1800s as a private army, basically, for corporations to rent, to come in and rough up strikers. And, of course, some have alleged over the years not just rough them up, but, you know, intimidate them, burn their houses down, kill them, attack their families. And Lincoln actually interceded and prevented the militia or the police of that particular state, and again, I think it was Illinois, but I could be wrong, from acting in concert with the employer against the strikers. And that's where his famous statement, you know, that labor is superior to capital because nothing, I don't remember the exact quote, but because without labor you wouldn't have capital, because labor always exists first. In other words, somebody has to make something before there's something to sell. And Lincoln got that. And it's amazing how, you know, conservatives of today don't get that. You know, or they do, but, you know, it's like... Yeah, the eternal baffling thing, and it's really not baffling because people are being lied to, and that's really the bottom line. I mean, there's this huge propaganda machine that didn't exist before the 1980s, you know, before the Reagan Revolution and the rise of right-wing talk radio. But why is it, you know, progressives, so many liberals, so many Democrats, so many people in the middle of the road politically wonder why it is that people who are working for minimum wage or, you know, all the way up to a union wage, that, you know, basically the working class of America, why would they ever, you know, go along with electing a conservative when the conservative agenda is openly hostile to labor and you know, aggressively supports cheap labor and the exporting of jobs overseas and, you know, the truckers from Mexico coming into the United States and on and on and on. Why? Why would they vote against their own interests?
Oh, well, it's because those liberals support gay marriages. Oh, come on.
This is what they've done, the cons have done so successfully. I live here in Vermont. Civil unions have been legal for, what, 2 years now? Even the conservatives here in Vermont don't care anymore. It's invisible. That's invisible. It's no big deal. Nobody notices. The state hasn't changed. I mean, we've got a few hotels that are probably doing a little bit better business than they were before. But that's about it. I mean, it's not like, you know, there's, you know, gay pride marches every day or something. It's you'd have no way of knowing if somebody didn't tell you, hey, you know, gay people can get married in Vermont, or they can get civil unioned.
Oh, but it's going to be a big deal. It's going to lead to the destruction of the society.
See, it's the same thing they said about black people dating white people. Now, isn't it interesting, by the way, that brown people are called black people and pink people are called white people? I remember this first pointed out to me, Dick Gregory and I. We were in Las Vegas. He was doing a fundraiser for this Community for Abused Kids that Louise and I had started. And he, just in the middle of a conversation, he turns to me and he goes, you know, you're not a white person, you're a pink person. He says, why don't you people call yourself pink people? I was like, well, I don't know, I thought I was kind of a tan person, actually. He's like, no, you're a pink person. Anyway, pardon the digression. Are we proud of our country? You know, it's how can we recapture that? How can we restore an America that works? I think the process is fairly straightforward. And it's basically, you know, undoing the damage. See, basically undoing the damage that the conservatives have done since 1980, since Reagan was elected. It basically the 20th century, the history of the first 80 years of the 20th century is the history of a reaction to conservative economics. The natural result of conservative economics, the Great Depression, followed by a response to conservative economics, that is the Wagner Act of 1935, allowing unions, the Minimum Wage Act. You'll recall the Supreme Court had declared the minimum wage unconstitutional back in 1913, something like that. Roosevelt packed the court with guys that agreed with him, got it passed. And it was actually a decent minimum wage. The creation of Social Security didn't exist before. Basically creating the social safety net. It's a good starting point. The cons, the conservatives are aggressively taking it apart. I think it's time to save it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chuck in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hey, listen, you know, I was really fascinated by your commentary, and I was thinking of a parallel in history. The Catholic Church in a lot of third world countries is pretty dominant, and people sort of religiously vote against what you might think is economically their best interests. And, you know, basically I think what the cons have succeeded in doing is convincing a lot of people who feel economically disenfranchised that they support, the cons support this sort of religious right, and you're going to get your reward in heaven and all that sort of thing. And, you know, you really have to be very, very careful that you don't offend the Lord here on earth. And that
well,
sort
you
of
know,
thing.
Beyond that, Chuck, they've actually, the cons have actually convinced a lot of working class people that they're on their side economically.
Well, that blows my mind.
Yeah, I know, but it's like you go out and you ask them, and they say that. Oh, we don't want those liberal elitists, those union leaders and things, you know, making decisions for America. You say, what? You know, it's pretty amazing. Chuck, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program here with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
No Sweat Apparel sold $150,000 worth of 100% union-made t-shirts, jeans, and athletic wear last year, and today they're launching a new product hoping to shake up an industry. It's a shoe, actually a line of Converse lookalikes made by unionized workers in Jakarta, Indonesia. On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new activist-themed line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a code pink high top, in part partnership with the DC-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. Mark Levinson is the chief economist at the Textile Workers Union, Unite.
It shows that companies
can produce union-made goods around the world, and this is what our international work has been trying to do, to support unions in the United States and around the world to stop the brutal race to the bottom.
One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous. And she said, oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year. And they said, Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date. Well, she had no answer for that.
Neiman has a long way to go before there's a world without sweatshops, but he's stitching together a vision one step at a time. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you on the 5th of July, the official 4th of July holiday. Monday, the 5th of July, 120 days to the elections. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We've got about 3 minutes. Let's try and get two calls in here. Rodney in Virginia is on the line. Hey, Rodney, what's up? Rodney? Well, I guess we've lost Rodney. Okay, let's go to Ann in Sarasota. Hey, Ann. Why am I not hearing Ann either? How strange. Well, oh, there, she's gone. Oh. I guess, anyhow, welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with you. That was odd. I wonder if John Ashcroft has been playing with our phones again. It's... Who knows? 4 minutes before the hour, anyhow. This piece by Michael Moore, this is really thought-provoking. He says, I can't think of a more American thing to do than to raise questions and demand truthful answers when our leader wants to send our sons and daughters off to die in a war. It dovetails perfectly with our quote for the day, President Theodore Roosevelt on May 7th, 1918, during World War I, saying essentially the same thing. Ann is back on the line. Hey, Ann, are you there?
Hi, yes.
Okay.
You called for Rodney, and I got confused.
Yeah, well, and he wasn't there, and you weren't there. And so anyhow, what's up?
Right. Well, it's interesting what you're just saying about Michael Moore, because it kind of leads into about asking questions. I have some questions. I was reading on the Internet over the weekend, and I found two articles, and both seemed very credible, where they went to all these so-called Muslim pro-terrorist websites kind of thing, and did check back to the source to see where they were actually from,
mm-hmm.
the websites. And more than half of them were from either the United States or from London. And I find that very interesting, and some of them even had names, some had corporate names, but that people in Houston, Texas, or Van Nuys, California, what are they doing running a Muslim pro-terrorist website? And if they truly are, and it's not some sort of front, then why isn't our government checking into it? Because these are
people. Well, I'll give you the answer real quickly. And number one, the government is checking into it. Number two, you can sign up with any one of dozens of internet service providers with a credit card. It's automatic. They don't, you know, there's no human being on the other end checking. All you have to do is register a domain name and give them a credit card, and boom, you've got a website. And it may be weeks, it may be months before the internet service provider, and in some cases they're very large companies, in some cases they're little, you know, bedroom operations, before they realize who it is who's got their website. And, you know, most of them are tracking them because they're trying to stop porn, but, you know, now this is becoming a problem. So a lot of these things, they pop up, they're there for a month or two, and then they get outed and they go away. That's largely what is going on, I believe. And, I don't think that it's a setup or anything. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The
founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Small businesses and the self-employed in Kentucky are worried about a $40 million shortfall affecting one of the state-approved companies that handles workers' compensation insurance. AIK Comp, whose board of trustees is controlled by Kentucky's largest business trade association, recently announced that for the last several years it had offered insurance premiums at a loss in hopes of attracting more customers. However, the plan backfired, leading to the cash crunch, and now AIK wants to retroactively charge clients in order to make up for the money. The proposal would hit some 5,000 policyholders hard, many of whom say such a one-time blast could bankrupt them. Kentucky's Department of Workers' Claims held a hearing on AIK's conundrum this week and is expected to rule on its fee request sometime this month.
On Thursday, 37,000 Illinois government workers, represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, voted to ratify a new four-year contract with the state. Winning by a 4-to-1 margin, the labor agreement gives union workers gross salary increases every 6 months starting next year. However, under the new contract, workers will be required to pay more for health care. Unusual for most labor deals, beginning in the third year, the state health insurance plan will be expanded to let employees enroll their same-sex domestic partners for vision, dental, and health care benefits.
A federal court has applied brakes to the plan of some Amtrak employees to stage a walkout. Amtrak union members intended to walk off the job to protest what they have called the underfunding of the passenger railroad. A federal law bans rail workers from striking, but the employees argued that the law would not apply because they would be committing a political action, not striking over negotiations of pay or working conditions. The court concluded that the law prohibits any action that would have the consequences of a strike and noted that the Amtrak unions are currently negotiating with the railroad over new contracts. Congress gave Amtrak $600 million less than the $1.8 billion the railroad said it needed to meet operating costs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A .com is now the largest employer in Afghanistan. You heard that right. The online discount retailer Overstock.com now buys crafts from more than 1,500 Afghan peace workers who are paid about 70 cents for every dollar a customer spends on their handmade rugs, jewelry, and clothing items. Afghan craft workers for Overstock.com are estimated to make an average of about $50 per month. The previously largest employer in Afghanistan was a brick factory in Herat, which has about 400 on its payroll.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
One of the greatest music joints in my town of Austin, Texas, was Liberty Lunch, which regularly featured up-and-coming local musicians as well as such national talents as Taj Mahal. This bar, cafe, and music yard was inexpensive, adventuresome, laid-back, unique, and, well, it was Austin. I say was because it's gone. A few years ago, our mayor gave taxpayer subsidies to lure something called CSC Corporation to town, giving it the spot of city-owned land that Liberty Lunch had rented for years. So now, we have a cold six-story building housing a high-tech military contractor that has no roots in Austin, is not in character with our city, and offers nothing to our way of life. What we do not have are the good eats, good sounds, and good spirit that emanated every night from that spot, drawing thousands of enthusiastic customers and helping define Austin for people everywhere. Austin is hardly alone in suffering a steady erosion of our homegrown businesses to impersonal corporate giants, big box stores, and cookie-cutter chains. It's probably happening where you live, too. No one voted for this, but these giants get public subsidies, wield massive advertising budgets, and have deep-pocket financing and the political clout to bully their way in, remaking our communities in their own bland, self-serving image. But you and I don't have to support them. Let's assert our own grassroots buying power to proclaim a new economic independence. A group called AMIBA, American Independent Business Alliance, has organized the Indy Challenge, urging we the people to rediscover the local businesses that make our town special, from coffee shops to restaurants, bookstores to hardware stores, pharmacies to farmers markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, we have the power. Ask your friends, families, clubs, churches, unions, and local governments to join you in using their dollars for community self-determination. For help, call AMIBA, 406-582-1255.
How to load the family vehicle for a 4th of July vacation. Step 1. Measure the allotted cubic feet of storage space. Step 2. Measure the cubic feet of family possessions to be loaded into said storage space. Step 3. At all costs, avoid saying the 7 unmentionable words. Your 3-year-old will just end up repeating them for the entire drive. This holiday road tip is brought to you by Geico. Stay alert, drive safe, save money.
You think I'd be behind some bushes, phases, maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doug.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine, really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the experts.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, my friends. Tom Hartman with you, here with you on the 5th of July. The official 4th of July holiday. We have some interesting events. A conservative alert for the day. This is a very strange one. Whoops. Yes. Our new conservative alert theme music. The Southern Baptist Convention. This from the Associated Press, a conservative denomination closely aligned with President Bush. He has given the big speech to them each of the last 3 years. Said it was offended by the Bush-Cheney campaign's effort to use church rosters for campaign purposes. Richard Land, president of the Southern Baptist Convention's Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, said, "I'm appalled that the Bush-Cheney campaign would intrude on a local congregation in this way." Now, what is the "this way" he's talking about? Well, it turns out that the Republican National Committee has just sent out a document to conservative churches across the United States. One section, reading from this AP story, the Associated Press, Baptists angry at Bush campaign tactics. And this from Saturday. One section of the document lists 22 coalition coordinator duties. It lays out a timeline for various activities targeting religious voters. By July 31st, for example, a coordinator is to
Send your church directory to your state Bush Cheney 04 headquarters or give a Bush Cheney 04 field representative your church directory. By July 31st, you're supposed to identify another conservative church in your community who we can organize for Bush. By July 31st, you're supposed to recruit five people in your church to help with the voter registration project. By July 31st, you're supposed to talk to your pastor about holding a Citizenship Sunday and voter registration drive. Among other things, among those 22 things. Barry Lynn, the tireless, you see him on talk radio constantly, the tireless guy who's... he's the head of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. I believe he's an Episcopal minister. He's a Protestant minister of some sort. Trying to keep church and state separate, which is really best not just for state but for church as well. You know. Anyhow, he says this effort is a shameless attempt to misuse and abuse churches for partisan political ends. But it's not just Barry Lynn who's complaining about it. The Reverend Welton Gaddy, who's the president of the Interfaith Alliance, said, "We are alarmed that this initiative by the Bush-Cheney campaign could lure religious organizations and religious leaders into dangerous territory where they risk losing their tax-exempt status and could be violating the law." And Rabbi David Saperstein, director of the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism, said, quote, "Efforts aimed at transforming houses of worship into political campaign offices stink to high heaven." End quote. Our conservative alert for the day. Now, moving along, maybe this whole hour is a conservative alert. You'll recall back during the early years of the Clinton administration. I believe it was 94 was the year that the Republicans came to power. At least Newt Gingrich did. And he came out with his list of words. And I have the list here. He says, and these are Newt's words, right? This is a list that was distributed to Republicans and to conservative talk show hosts and Republican or conservative commentators, editorialists, and op-ed writers. Newt said, "Use the list below to help you define your campaign and your vision of public service. These words can help give extra power to your message. In addition, these words help develop the positive side of the contrast." See, they don't call them negative ads. They call them contrast ads. "That you should create with your opponent, giving your community something to vote for." So whenever you describe a conservative, you should use one of the following words in every sentence: actively, activist, building, candidly, caring, challenge, change, children, choice, choose, citizen, commitment, common sense, complete, confident, conflict, control, courage, crusade, debate, dream, duty, eliminate, good time in prison, empowerment, fair, family, freedom, hard work, help, humane, incentive, initiative, lead, learn, legacy, liberty, light, listen, mobilize, moral, movement, opportunity, passionate, peace, pioneer, precious, premise, preserve, principled, pristine, pro-issue flag, pro-children, pro-environment, pro-reform, prosperity, protect, proud, pride, provide, reform, rights, share, strength, success, tough, truth, unique, vision, we, us, our." Hey, those are all the words that if you're conservative, you need to work into at least every paragraph, ideally every sentence, when describing yourself or your worldview. Now, the second half of the list was called contrasting words. And here, again, quoting Newt Gingrich, "Often we search hard for words to define our opponents. Sometimes we are hesitant to use contrast. Remember that creating a difference helps you. These are powerful words that can create a clear and easily understood contrast. Apply these words to your opponent, their record, proposals, and their party. Abuse of power. Anti-flag, anti-family, anti-child, anti-jobs, betray, bizarre, bosses, bureaucracy, cheat, coercion, compassion is not enough, collapsing, consequences, corrupt, corruption, criminal rights, crisis, cynicism, decay, deeper, destroy, destructive, devour, disgrace, endanger, excuse, failed,
greed, hypocrisy, ideological, impose, incompetent, insecure, insensitive, intolerant, liberal, lie, limits, machine, mandates, obsolete, pathetic, patronage, permissive attitude, pessimistic, punish, poor, radical, red tape, self-serving, selfish, sensationalist, shallow, shame, sick, spending, stagnation, status quo, steal, taxes, they, them, threaten, traitors, unionized, urgency, waste, and welfare.
This, in 1984, was, boy, just occurred to me. That was the year that George Orwell predicted, wasn't it? Well, that was Newt's word list, and it is still in use, you will notice. I'm sure many of those words you... Oh, yeah, I remember the last time I heard a conservative using those words. Well, now it's gone a step further. Frank Luntz, the Republican pollster, apparently has studied neurolinguistic programming. It's the only thing I can come up with. Because he really has this. He understands what's called framing. The fact, you see, it's no accident that although there is no connection, at least in a way that would threaten us or anybody else in the world, between Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. Now, on a technicality, as Dick Cheney will quickly point out, you could say there is a connection in as much as Osama sent a couple of messengers to Saddam saying, hey, let's do business, and Saddam said, no way, Charlie, and threw them out of his country. Or that there was one small terrorist training camp up in the north that Saddam didn't want in his country, but that we were protecting because it was under the northern no-fly zone. But it's no accident that the majority of Americans, something as I recall, something like over 70% of Americans who watch faux news regularly, but the majority of Americans in general believe that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. In fact, at one point, the majority of Americans actually believed that the planes that hit the towers were flown by Iraqis. And, of course, they weren't. They were mostly Saudis and a few Sudanese, but no Iraqis. So Frank Luntz comes out with his instructions to the Reich Wing about how to perpetuate the illusion in people's minds that we had to go into Iraq because Saddam Hussein somehow was responsible for 9/11. How to keep that lie going so that George W. Bush can get reelected. The paper, which is actually published on the internet, he was a guest on Bill Moyers' Now show last Friday. You can find it at www.pbs.org/now, and just scroll down, look for Frank Luntz's program, and then there's a link off to his. It's called Communicating the Principles of Prevention and Protection in the War on Terror. He lays it right out. He says, the overwhelming amount of language in this document is intended to create a lexicon for explaining the policy of preemption in the war in Iraq. However, you will not find any instance in which we suggest you use the actual word preemption or the phrase the war in Iraq to communicate your policies to the American public. To do so is to undermine your message from the start. These are not the right words to use. Please do not underestimate the importance of these rhetorical nuances. He says, your efforts are to be about the principles of prevention and protection. That's the phrase you use instead of saying preemptive war. And instead of referring to the war in Iraq, you refer always to the war on terror. He said, you must develop a better way to talk about Iraq in the greater context of the war on terror. Here are the five essential message points. And he goes through them. And these, and it's just amazing how, I don't know how long this thing has been out, apparently for several months, maybe much longer than that. And you see these, con spokesmen and women, you know, representing the conservative think tanks or members of Congress or the Senate on TV talk shows. You hear them on radio. Listen to right-wing radio. You'll certainly, you know, run across them a lot. And they have these 5 points down. These are the talking points to convince Americans that white is black and red is blue and up is down and left is right, and that the war in Iraq somehow has to do with 9/11. To convince Americans of that, even though the 9/11 Commission has come out and said there's no connection between Iraq and 9/11, there's no connection between Saddam and Osama. None. Wasn't what the Bushies wanted to hear. So what are the 5 points? I'll share those with you right after the break. 20 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. A place where smart people get their news.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Has George W. Bush delivered on his 2000 campaign pledge to run the government more like a business? New reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Office of Personnel Management show that the federal workforce grew by a net 70,000 since Bush took office. And these numbers don't even count contractors who now compete for federal work. Of the 12 million people who work in some capacity for the federal government, less than 2 million are actually employed by government agencies.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, talking about freedom, in fact, and the freedom to really know what's going on, to hear truth. I'm just boggled by this, frankly. Frank Luntz, the Republican pollster and new guru of the language police on the right. Although it's really not language police in the negative context. See, that's a great another great newtism, you know, to tar the left with. But in any case, he's the language guru, let's say. His 5 points. These are the 5 things that you need to say no matter what somebody says to you. Right? If somebody's trying to debate with you and they raise the issue of either preemptive war. Now, keeping in mind that, you know, the founders understood that preemptive war is wrong and illegal. That's why they attached a Bill of Particulars to the Declaration of Independence that we're celebrating today, listing the crimes of George III's administration. But anyhow, he says, whenever you're going to talk about preemptive war, and certainly, you know, we didn't do it then. It's never been the policy of the United States to engage in preemptive war until the so-called Bush Doctrine came along. And these guys are really clear that they don't even want to own this phrase. We're not even going to talk it. Don't even use the word preemptive. Instead, use the words prevent and protect. It's a preventative war. See, that's what Hitler said when he invaded Poland. He said, you know, we have to invade Poland because they're going to invade us if we don't. They've been shooting across their border at us. Yeah, that's what he claimed. And go back and read The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich by Schurer. We have to have a preventative war to protect the homeland. Homeland, another word that came out of the Third Reich that Hitler and Hess borrowed from the Zionist movement, actually, in the 1920s, back before there was an Israel. So anyway, it's 5 talking points. Number one, 9/11 changed everything. He says, no matter, you know, whatever somebody says, he says, 9/11 changed everything is the context by which everything follows. No speech about Homeland Security or Iraq should begin without a reference to 9/11. In other words, whenever you make a speech about Iraq, start it with a reference to 9/11. People will link them in their brains, even though there's no link. Isn't this sweet? This is brainwashing principles for America. Number two, the principles of prevention and protection still have universal support and should be addressed prior to talking about Iraq. In other words, we had to invade a country that represented no threat to us not because we are pursuing a policy of preemptive war, but because we're pursuing a policy of prevention and protection. Number three, prevention at home can require aggressive action abroad. It is better to fight the war of terror on the streets of Baghdad than in the streets of New York or Washington. See, this is a straw man argument. It sets it up, you know. Well, wait a minute. You want to fight the war on terror in the streets of Baghdad? There were no terrorists there until we went in and opened, you know, and left the borders open for a whole year. Today, the Iraqi government arrested two Iranian citizens in Baghdad. It is the first time since we arrived more than a year ago that a foreigner has actually been arrested in Iraq. They finally have two of them, foreign terrorists. Finally. Why? Well, because we opened the borders and let them in. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Small businesses and the self-employed in Kentucky are worried about a $40 million shortfall affecting one of the state-approved companies that handles workers' compensation insurance. AIK Comp, whose board of trustees is controlled by Kentucky's largest business trade association, recently announced that for the last several years it had offered insurance premiums at a loss in hopes of attracting more customers. However, the plan backfired, leading to the cash crunch, and now AIK wants to retroactively charge clients in order to make up for the money. The proposal would hit some 5,000 policyholders hard, many of whom say such a one-time blast could bankrupt them. Kentucky's Department of Workers' Claims held a hearing on AIK's conundrum this week and is expected to rule on its fee request sometime this month.
On Thursday, 37,000 Illinois government workers, represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, voted to ratify a new four-year contract with the state. Winning by a 4-to-1 margin, the labor agreement gives union workers gross salary increases every 6 months starting next year. However, under the new contract, workers will be required to pay more for health care. Unusual for most labor deals, beginning in the third year, the state health insurance plan will be expanded to let employees enroll their same-sex domestic partners for vision, dental, and health care benefits.
A federal court has applied brakes to the plan of some Amtrak employees to stage a walkout. Amtrak union members intended to walk off the job to protest what they have called the underfunding of the passenger railroad. A federal law bans rail workers from striking, but the employees argued that the law would not apply because they would be committing a political action, not striking over negotiations of pay or working conditions. The court concluded that the law prohibits any action that would have the consequences of a strike and noted that the Amtrak unions are currently negotiating with the railroad over new contracts. Congress gave Amtrak $600 million less than the $1.8 billion the railroad said it needed to meet operating costs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A .com is now the largest employer in Afghanistan. You heard that right. The online discount retailer Overstock.com now buys crafts from more than 1,500 Afghan peace workers who are paid about 70 cents for every dollar a customer spends on their handmade rugs, jewelry, and clothing items. Afghan craft workers for Overstock.com are estimated to make an average of about $50 per month. The previously largest employer in Afghanistan was a brick factory in Herat, which has about 400 on its payroll.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, we're talking about how the right uses and twists the truth to cause people to believe things that aren't true. Are people who vote Republican or for conservative Democrats the victims of propaganda? Our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to share your observations on this. Here's the 5 points Frank Luntz says you should make whenever anybody raises the issue of Iraq or the Bush doctrine of preemptive war. The two, you know, foundational, dangerous, destructive lies that this administration has been trying to use to hold and maintain power and increase its power, actually. Number one, 9/11 changed everything. Number two, instead of using the phrase preemption, you use the words prevention and protection. Number three, prevention at home can require aggressive action abroad. It's better to fight the war on terror on the streets of Baghdad than in the streets of New York or Washington. Number four, terrorism has no boundaries, and neither should efforts to prevent it. He says, talk about how terrorism has taken the lives of the British, the Spanish, Italians, Germans, Israelis, innocents from all across the globe. Remind listeners that this is truly an international challenge. Americans are not the only targets. This justifies, I guess, our traveling all around the world and doing whatever we want. And number five, the world is a better place without Saddam Hussein. Now, see, that is such a classic straw man argument. It's you know, like, if you could break into, Soledad, I think, is the prison where, I'm probably wrong. I don't know which prison he's being held in. Mr. Helter Skelter there. Or any mass murderer. You know, if you could track down some mass murderer and you snuck into his jail cell and killed him. Say, well, the world is better off without this guy. Do you think that they're going to say, well, okay, you can continue to be president of the United States or whatever your job is? We're actually going to consider that a noble act that you did, because the world is better off without that guy. What about the rule of law? What about our being a nation that has historically set an example for the world by being the example for the world? He goes through the details of how to handle each one of these things, setting the context. 9/11 changed everything. This is the first of his five talking points. He says, on this issue, more than any, context is everything, and everything is italicized. The American people have notoriously short attention spans, Frank Luntz points out. He says, start with what we all hold in common, the shared experience of the tragedy on September 11th. And then he points out, before Americans will accept where you want to go, you need to emphasize where we all have been. And he gives an example of Dick Cheney doing this. Here's a quote from Vice President Dick Cheney, and it's headlined, The Context of 9/11, Words That Work. In other words, here's Dick Cheney contorting our language to convince people of something that's not true. That's not how Frank Luntz describes it. It's accomplishing, well, he does, he, you know, he, it, oddly enough, he doesn't build in here a moral or intellectual case for why conservatives should do this. He just tells them how to do it. Anyhow, Dick Cheney, quote, 9/11 changed everything. It changed the way we think about threats to the United States. It changed our recognition of our vulnerabilities. It changed the kind of national security strategy we need to pursue in guaranteeing the safety and security of the American people, end quote. Frank Luntz goes on to say, before you can talk about Iraq, you must talk about homeland security. Make the case for prevention here at home before the need for action abroad. Again, a very clever psychological device here. Get people thinking about themselves and their families, and then link that feeling of fear or protectiveness with Iraq. Specifically Iraq. Before you can talk Iraq, you must talk about homeland security. He says you have to explain that this is not a war in which victory is measured by a signed treaty or definitive military victory. Well, then it's not a war, is it, Frank? I mean, this is right out of George Orwell's lexicon. Number three, he said, even while you are making the case for prevention, see, that's the word you use instead of preemptive war, prevention, talk about what you are protecting. Again, another great quote from Dick Cheney, we need to do what we've been doing for the last 200 years, and that's being American. Right. Then Luntz says, let them know what you are trying to protect, and they'll give you a wider berth in what you are trying to preempt. Keep in mind, he has advised his conservative speakers never to use the word preempt. But, you know, just between us girls here, let them know what you are trying to protect, and they'll give you a wider berth in what you are trying to preempt. As below, espouse the principles of being responsible and reasonable in how we react to the threat of terror. Above all else, reassure Americans that you are protecting them. And here's an example. Secretary Tom Ridge being interviewed by CNN. CNN interviewer says, a lot of Americans want to travel, not only in the United States, but around the world this summer. Do you believe they should go about their plans as scheduled, or would you advise caution? And here's Tom Ridge. No, I believe we have to continue to do what we've done for 200-plus years. That's keep being America. Terrorists win when we significantly alter our plans. We have to be responsible and reasonable, reacting in response to specific information, but we cannot and will not sacrifice our freedom. End quote. Talking point number four, connect the dots. You have to explain Iraq's role in the wider war on terror. This is very revealing. He says, Americans expected smoking gun caliber evidence of weapons of mass destruction. So long as that kind of irrefutable proof isn't available, a different tact toward indicting the Saddam regime must be taken. The Iraqi regime must be indicted because they committed, now this is bold and italic, the same kinds of actions as those of other terrorists. Oh. Everybody who eats mashed, you know, did you know that the majority of people on death row eat mashed potatoes? The majority of convicted murderers eat mashed potatoes? Let's go get the people who eat potatoes. He goes on to say, associate them by their actions, their goals, and their behavior. The following language from President Bush is precisely the right way to make the case. And then he quotes President George W. Bush, the violence we are seeing in Iraq is familiar. The terrorists who take hostages. See, isn't this interesting? There were no terrorists in Iraq before we got there. Or if they were, Saddam was dealing with them. I mean, they did not have a terrorism problem. The terrorists who take hostages or plant a roadside bomb near Baghdad is serving the same ideology of murder that kills innocent people on trains in Madrid. See, here's another linkage. Iraq to Osama and Al-Qaeda. A linkage that doesn't exist. And murders children on buses in Jerusalem. And link it to Israel. And blows up a nightclub in Bali. Link it to Osama. And cuts the throat of a young reporter for being a Jew. Link it to, you know, Osama and the nasty folks. We've seen the same ideology of murder and the killing of 241 Marines in Beirut, the first attack on the World Trade Center, and the destruction of two embassies in Africa, and the attack on the USS Cole, and the merciless horror inflicted upon thousands of innocent men and women and children on September the 11th, 2001. Now, keep in mind, that paragraph began with a sentence about Iraq. And Frank Luntz says, George Bush is doing this perfectly. And apparently he is. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's take some calls here. Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Well, it gives more affirmation to what this Frank Luntz stuff about the word con. It's very appropriate. Notice it's about winning the argument rather than truth and understanding and cooperation.
Yeah. Oh, not just winning the argument. This is, we're talking about indoctrinating people, changing the way people think.
Not educating people.
Causing them to believe something that's not true.
Yes. And it was interesting, I was watching a PBS show called To the Contrary, and a woman on there, a con, was doing exactly this stuff. She was using the straw man stuff, putting words in people's mouths that, you know, they didn't even remotely say.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, most people caught her on it. And a very interesting note, a couple nights ago on in Denver here, we've got a PBS show called Colorado State of Mind, and they had people discussing Iraq, and one of the guys was a soldier on the ground in Baghdad, an intel officer, and he wasn't buying into any of this stuff. He wouldn't play any of the games unless he said, hey, you know, this is not a war on terrorism. These are not terrorists here. These are insurgents. In Afghanistan, it's insurgents.
Yeah.
And this is the guy inside the military who's just ripping on the other people for trying to play the games on this. And he says, basically, what we've got to do is, how big a loss do we want? We got to get out of here. He was basically saying, we've lost in Iraq.
Yeah. And here it is, July 5th, the official celebration of the July 4th insurgency in the United States in 1776.
Yes. The people who were considered terrorists. And actually, when you read the Declaration of Independence, you look at that stuff and think what percentage of people actually supported, you know, as we know, it was a minority of people who supported the revolution.
Yeah, between a third and...
These guys wouldn't have a chance today.
yeah, it's spooky. Thanks for the call, Jeff. Good to hear from you. Once Iraq is established, Frank Luntz says, well, let's continue here. Paul in Detroit's on the line. Hey, Paul, don't want to keep you waiting any longer. What's up?
Hello, Tom. Just wanted to mention that there's a major study in today's current issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, and this study has been approved by the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. And, you know, while we're enjoying these parades over the weekend, one out of six of our troops are coming back from Iraq suffering from stress-related disorders such as major depression and severe anxiety.
Right, post-traumatic stress disorder. Yeah, I talked about that last Thursday or Friday on the program was when I think that first came out, and you're absolutely right. It's startling, and they're seeing a much higher percentage of them from this war than from any other war since Vietnam, because this is the first war in which we had a large number of casualties, in which we've both had soldiers killing a lot of other people, which is a traumatic experience for a soldier, and being killed, you know, watching their buddies get killed. And so, you know, when we invaded Grenada or, you know, whatever, I mean, other quote, wars that we've had since Vietnam have not had the impact on our soldiers that this one does. The other thing, Paul, is today the Pentagon released the fact that 16,000 of our soldiers have been wounded or injured in Iraq. And up until today, it's interesting, you know, and today ain't much of a news cycle day. Nobody's paying attention, right?
Yes.
Up until today, the official number was in the 4,000 range, 3,000 to 4,000. So that's just been
one
bad.
Other thing that's fascinating, reading the study in the New England Journal of Medicine, there are major barriers against our troops from seeking help. And one of the major problems is stigma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when soldiers complain about not being able to sleep or having anxiety attacks and things, number one, it's a career stopper, and number two, their peers treat them like they're wusses or that there's something wrong with them or whatever, and then you add to that the fact that our military hospital system is so, I mean, there's a 6-month waiting list in some places, you know, just to be seen by somebody. And it all adds up to a real problem for our soldiers. If we really supported our GIs, we would get them out of Iraq immediately, and we would be providing them with the kind of care and assistance and pay, you know, that's appropriate, rather than what this administration is doing.
I sure thank you, Tom, for your efforts.
Thanks for listening, Paul, and spread the good word.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. 1-866-889-8894. Michael in Santa Fe, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Yeah, just real quick for the break. Frank Luntz, he's the official pollster for CNBC, right?
Maybe. He's the official pollster.
He's always on with Chris Matthews and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think he's the official pollster for the Republican Party, but I couldn't.
He also does shows for CNBC where they get two groups of people together and ask them questions of the day and stuff like that.
Oh, interesting.
And so I was wondering, You Bill Moyers was covering this. Is that what you said?
Yeah, Moyers interviewed him. It was played on Friday. I'm sure it was recorded.
Oh, Moyers interviewed him, and he was confessing to this stuff?
He was bragging about it. It was actually David Brancaccio who interviewed him, but it was
right.
On Bill Moyers' show, and he was bragging about it. Yeah.
So I wonder how this will cover in the regular corporate media. That's what I'm kind of wondering. I wonder if this will be a news story about, you know, here's this pollster and his new, you know, Orwellian wordplay game.
They're not going to go near it. I guarantee you.
It will not be
covered. At all, and in fact, you know, the way that Luntz was pitching it, it was basically an oblique pitch for his services. What he was saying, he kept spinning on his own, and he actually did a couple of spin things, and then pointed out to Brancaccio, "See, I just spun that. Did you see how I did that?" And
wow.
You know, he would just take stuff and spin it around about a rack, and then on two or three different occasions, he mentioned the fact that he teaches corporate people how to do this. And I suspect that that's really where he makes his money, is teaching corporate PR people and CEOs how to respond to the press and how to spin things so that, no, that's not a collapse of our pension plan. It's actually a recalibration, right?
Yeah, the way to fight back at this is, as you say, around the water cooler.
Yeah, we've got to wake people up. I mean, this is the beginning and the end of it. Every progressive movement, even the negative movements, for better or for worse, they always begin at the bottom and work their way up. And we have to wake people up with this. And it's to the fact that this kind of stuff is, I mean, this is George Orwell writ large. I don't know. Did you ever read 1984?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm reading it right now, Tom.
Yeah.
to inspire me for the election. It's like to get me inspired to do something.
It's a scary, depressing book. You know, I read about a third of it when I was in high school and stopped and did the cliff notes, you know, for the obligatory thing. And I was in Australia about 4 years ago, and I had it with me, and I decided to read it, and I started having nightmares, you know.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Anyhow, thanks for the call, Michael. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour, discussing solutions and not false promises, helping you win the water cooler wars.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation, free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new, and you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. Walmart faces the largest class action lawsuit in U.S. history. A 3-year-old sex discrimination suit against Walmart has been certified as class action. This means the nation's largest retailer is now the defendant in the nation's largest private civil rights case. More from Kalia Ramirez in Berkeley, California.
The suit says the giant retailer is discriminating against women in pay and promotions and creating a demeaning atmosphere for women workers. The class certification makes the 6 named plaintiffs in Duke's versus Walmart stores representatives of the interests of a class of about 1.6 million women who have worked at Walmart or Sam's Club in the United States at any time since December 26, 1998. Brad Seligman of the Berkeley-based Impact Fund is the plaintiff's lead attorney. He says class action status means Walmart cannot afford to ignore this lawsuit.
The jury's judgment is going to affect the rights of 1.6 or more million women, which means Walmart is not going to be dealing with little pinpricks from a judgment here, from an individual, or a judgment there. They're facing the challenge to their whole company.
When the decision was announced, Walmart spokeswoman Mona Williams told Associated Press that the retailer had recently announced a new job classification and pay structure for its hourly workers. Seligman says he doesn't know the details of the change, but that the sex discrimination suit is spurring Walmart to action, on a public relations level at least.
Their commercials have totally changed, haven't they? They're now the Rainbow Coalition Works at Walmart. Walmart clearly felt it had to make some changes to blunt what it anticipated was going to be the storm of negative publicity, which we've seen happen.
Walmart wants to appeal the class certification. Meanwhile, Seligman says the plaintiffs would like a jury trial next year. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Kellya.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's a beautiful day.
And welcome back. Are people who vote Republican or who vote for conservative Democrats the victims of propaganda? Let's take a look. Frank Luntz, the Republican pollster. And I'm sure he wouldn't describe himself as a propagandist, so I'm reluctant to attach a label to him. Just to let you conclude yourself what... He's actually a very smart guy who knows a lot about the use of language. And I'm sure any corporation that hires him is going to get their money's worth, as have the Republicans, clearly. He says, for example, item number 6, once Iraq is established as part of the wider war on terror, right, which, of course, we know not to, the Iraq has nothing to do with any so-called war on terror, because Iraq had nothing to do with the terrorism that was inflicted on the United States in 9/11, or any other terrorism for that matter, other than Saddam sending $25,000 to suicide bomber families in Palestine. And if anybody in America believes that Saddam Hussein was the only guy who was supporting suicide, or that Iraq was the only state that was supporting suicide bomber families in Palestine or in Israel, I got a bridge I want to sell you in Brooklyn. It's, start with Saudi Arabia, okay? That's a clue. Anyhow, he says, once Iraq is established as part of the wider war on terror, a greater case can be made for waging war there, not here. He says, if you describe it simply as preemptive action or preemptive war, some Americans will carry deep reservations about the rightness of the cause. Americans are conditioned to think that hitting first is usually wrong. If, however, you have successfully connected Iraq to the wider war on terror, and if you are able to personalize this policy, parenthesis, quote, attacking them before they can attack us, close parenthesis, close quote, then you will have addressed their concerns. This is like talking to the unconscious of people. Number eight, communicate that you are leading the fight for the principles of freedom and security. And he talks about using words like patience and perseverance. And number nine, do not forget Saddam. More accurately, do not let the American people forget Saddam. Yeah. You need to do a better job of reminding Americans of the long-term positive impact for the Iraqi people and for America as well. Well, we'll see. Anyhow, propaganda on the right. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman program.
This is WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Small businesses and the self-employed in Kentucky are worried about a $40 million shortfall affecting one of the state-approved companies that handles workers' compensation insurance. AIK Comp, whose board of trustees is controlled by Kentucky's largest business trade association, recently announced that for the last several years it had offered insurance premiums at a loss in hopes of attracting more customers. However, the plan backfired, leading to the cash crunch, and now AIK wants to retroactively charge clients in order to make up for the money. The proposal would hit some 5,000 policyholders hard, many of whom say such a one-time blast could bankrupt them. Kentucky's Department of Workers' Claims held a hearing on AIK's conundrum this week and is expected to rule on its fee request sometime this month.
On Thursday, 37,000 Illinois government workers, represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, voted to ratify a new four-year contract with the state. Winning by a 4-to-1 margin, the labor agreement gives union workers gross salary increases every 6 months starting next year. However, under the new contract, workers will be required to pay more for health care. Unusual for most labor deals, beginning in the third year, the state health insurance plan will be expanded to let employees enroll their same-sex domestic partners for vision, dental, and health care benefits.
A federal court has applied brakes to the plan of some Amtrak employees to stage a walkout. Amtrak union members intended to walk off the job to protest what they have called the underfunding of the passenger railroad. A federal law bans rail workers from striking, but the employees argued that the law would not apply because they would be committing a political action, not striking over negotiations of pay or working conditions. The court concluded that the law prohibits any action that would have the consequences of a strike and noted that the Amtrak unions are currently negotiating with the railroad over new contracts. Congress gave Amtrak $600 million less than the $1.8 billion the railroad said it needed to meet operating costs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A .com is now the largest employer in Afghanistan.
You heard that right. The online discount retailer Overstock.com now buys crafts from more than 1,500 Afghan peace workers who are paid about 70 cents for every dollar a customer spends on their handmade rugs, jewelry, and clothing items. Afghan craft workers for Overstock.com are estimated to make an average of about $50 per month. The previously largest employer in Afghanistan was a brick factory in Herat, which has about 400 on its payroll.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
When you lift a log, you never know what kind of ugly squirmies you'll find underneath. Representative Chris Bell, a Houston Democrat, recently lifted a big one in Congress when he filed an ethics complaint against House Republican leader Tom DeLay. The first ugly squirmies were the details of DeLay's corruption, including everything from bribery to the abuse of power. DeLay, who controls the flow of legislation in the House, is not shy about demanding millions of dollars in political funds from corporate lobbyists, telling them that they must pay the piper if they want their special interest bills to move. But Bell uncovered other squirmies, too. In particular, he showed that Congress's own ethics process has been corrupted. Interestingly, Bell's filing against DeLay was the first ethics complaint since 1997. Why? Because the Ethics Committee has effectively been put beyond the reach of those who might dare bring charges against any member of the cozy congressional club, especially against any of the leaders. In 1997, House leaders quietly barred outsiders from filing charges against unethical behavior. No public interest groups, no citizen watchdogs, no hometown constituents, no media outlets are allowed now to challenge a Congress critter's behavior. Only members of Congress themselves can file ethics charges. But then the leaders of both parties did something else. They agreed to an unofficial truce, promising that they would not file any complaints against each other. Convenient, huh? This is the truce that Bell broke. In part, he might have had the gumption to stand up to the system because he has nothing to lose or gain by it. He lost his re-election bid in the March primary, so he's a lame duck. This is Jim Hightower saying, now the leaders are rushing to stop any future Bells from breaking open their tightly closed system. A top Tom DeLay lieutenant says he wants a new rule prohibiting lame duck members from filing ethics complaints.
Tune in tonight to Hangouts, where you'll meet a pop star with a pool for a living room.
Sorry to interrupt, but why check out other people's dream homes when you can use a home equity loan to create your own? Now at LendingTree.com, you can find home equity rates as low as 3.75% APR. But they won't stay that way forever. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. Or visit LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border here in the United States, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org on the internet. And beaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. Our number 1-866-889-8894
you'd like to call in. Greetings today to our friends at WRVC, our new listeners in Huntington, West Virginia, the Tri-State's home for news, sports, and talk. WRVC just picked up our program, and very pleased to be here and with you. And should you care to participate, our number 1-866-889-8894. We have a caught you doing something right alert. I believe in praise where praise is due. This for Senator Chuck Hagel, a Republican. As was reported in San Francisco Times today, Senator Chuck Hagel, an influential moderate Republican from Nebraska, sharply criticized the Bush administration in an interview here Tuesday, saying that the war in Iraq appears to have hurt America in its battle against terrorism. Hagel, a politician sometimes mentioned as a future presidential contender, also said the United States is going to have to consider restarting the draft to maintain its many military commitments abroad. In a sharp critique of the leader of his own party, Hagel said he believes the occupation of Iraq by the American military was poorly planned and has spread terrorist cells more widely around the world. This puts in motion a new geographic dispersion of the terrorists, he says. Iraq has become a training ground. He went on to say that the Iraq war has created more terrorists and given them more targets, American soldiers. Hagel, by the way, is a decorated veteran of the war in Vietnam. In another area in which Hagel's views differ sharply from the president's, he suggested that the best way to ultimately win the war on terror is to earn the trust and respect of foreigners, especially younger people in the Arab world and other parts of the globe. The best way to do that, he said, is to make the United States more accessible to them and more open to immigration. We are pushing away our friends, our allies, the next generation around the world, Hagel said. So, caught you doing something right to Chuck Hagel. Yeah, he's a jolly good fellow. Well, sort of. I have to say, I have a certain ambivalence about Chuck Hagel. Chuck Hagel used to work for George H.W. Bush. Spent several decades in Washington, D.C., working for Bush the Elder. Then he went to Nebraska and became the CEO of a company that manufactured and sold electronic voting machines, which has gone through a couple of different incarnations. It was originally funded by a family that believes that the Bible should replace the Constitution for the United States. And so anyhow, he went to work for these folks, and that company has, you know, through several iterations now become ES&S, one of the two big, ES&S and Diebold are the two big voting machine companies. And as CEO of that company, he got their machines installed all across Nebraska, which is the state where he lived. And then he decided to run for the state, for the United States Senate from Nebraska. He ran against an incumbent Democratic governor, upset victories. Now, the votes were being counted on the machines that he had sold to the state by the company that up until just a few months earlier he had been the president of. He didn't disclose that, by the way. He represented himself as an investor and businessman. And the Washington Post said that when Hagel won the state, it was the upset victory of the year. Nobody predicted it. Of all the races in America, it was the most unpredictable. That was 8 years ago. It was eight years ago. And 2 years ago, when he ran again against a guy named Charlie Matulka, tried to raise this issue of the voting machines being rigged, possibly. And, in fact, he was on this program. And he said, you know, it didn't. He says, this guy stole the election. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. What I do know is that there's no way to know because of the nature of the electronic voting machines. 1-866-889-8894, our toll-free telephone number. Frank in Los Angeles is on the line. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thank you for taking my call.
Well, I'm pleased to have you call. What's on your mind, Frank?
I don't know what's going on with the Republicans. I don't know if it was 60 Minutes or the Dateline program, but last night that poor lady that had both of her breasts lopped off by accident at the hospital and can only sue for, I guess, a maximum of $250,000. $250,000, as this one Republican from Pennsylvania qualified it.
Yeah, this is you know, part of the conservative agenda is to make sure that you and I, we the people, don't have any significant power relative to that of corporations, the largest corporate, at least the largest corporations in America, the ones that are the major donors to conservative causes and to the Republican Party, and in through the Democratic Leadership Council to the Democratic Party too. I mean, there's a lot of Democrats who are beholden to these folks and who are going right along with this nonsense, this stuff about tort reform. I mean, it's nuts. It's
absolutely
nuts.
I would love to give the opportunity for these fiscally minded conservatives, so to say, or even Democrats as well, especially those of the male gender, if they'd gladly step to the front of the line to have their genitalia lopped off for a couple hundred grand.
Yeah, well, you might find one or two candidates, but it's
there might be one or two candidates that already have. We just don't know about it.
Yeah. Well, actually.
Thank you, Tom. I love the show.
Thanks, Frank. Yeah.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. Yeah, let's not go there. There may be. Anyhow, it's the Tom Hartman program here, 13 minutes past the hour. I wanted to share some Patrick Henry with you. I wanted to get into the Declaration of Independence, which we're celebrating today. Today, the 5th of July, the official 4th of July holiday nationwide. And just quickly recap what the people who signed the Declaration of Independence confronted as a consequence of their actions, the choice that they made. And I think this is really important stuff. And I think this is the context. I mean, we live in a country that is the result of one of the most extraordinary experiments in history. 7,000 years ago, 8,000 years ago, was the beginning of what is referred to broadly as Western civilization, with a fellow by the name of Gilgamesh, who rose up. The Epic of Gilgamesh is the oldest known written story, right? 8,000 years old. Some people say the Upanishads, the Hindu Vedas are older. It's a big argument. But anyhow, we'll go with Gilgamesh for the moment. And the oldest known written story, and it's the story of this guy who rose up against the forest god Hambuba, cut his head off, and then cut down the cedars of Lebanon and built this mighty city, Uruk, in what is now known as Iraq. It was about 60 miles north of Baghdad. And this is, in fact, the Epic of Gilgamesh, this oldest written story, even has a righteous man who was told by one of the gods to build an ark and put two of every animal in it because a great flood was coming, and the flood came and blah, blah, blah. It's all in there, right? This was written 3,000 years before the Bible. And from that point in history until 1776, humans had always been ruled by one of three groups of people, either by warlord kings, by theocratic popes or mullahs, that is, those who said God told them to do it, warlord kings who ruled by threat of violence, or by the rich, a system called feudalism. Rule by the rich is known as feudalism. And it's very stable. It existed in Europe for 1,000 years recently, and you could say over the long term, much longer than that, really. But it was always one of those three, and in each one of those three systems, those in power have the rights, and we, the people, have just privileges. And in 1776, the founders of this country said, let's flip that pyramid upside down. Let's invert that and give all of the rights to we, the people. And if any of us, we the people, if any among us decide to create an institution, whether it's a civic club, an organization, a church, a business, even a government, even the government of the United States of America, if we get together and create an institution, that institution will not have rights, it will have only privileges. And we the people will decide what those privileges are, and we grant them and we can revoke them. And this had never been done before, and the whole world thought we were nuts. Alexander Hamilton, in 1787, stood up on the opening day of the Constitutional Convention and said, this is nuts, essentially. He said, the aristocracy is the most stable form of government. We're moving in very dangerous areas here. Him and John Adams and many of the other conservatives of the day did not believe that democracy could survive. Adams, in his last years, wrote a long letter to Jefferson in which he said, democracy always commits suicide. Jefferson said, no, I believe in the people. And right up until the other end of the Civil War, until after the Civil War, most of the nations of the world, thought that, hey, these guys are crazy. They're doing an experiment. It's not going to work. Alexis de Tocqueville came over here in 1834, spent 6 months traveling around, wrote Democracy in America, a critique of American democracy, in which he said he didn't think it was going to last. It was the best-selling book of the first half of the 19th century. Still in print. Anyhow, it's a remarkable experiment that we have here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tony in Maryland has been patiently waiting on the line. Tony, hey, what's up?
Hey, I really like the subject that you're working on today because I think a lot of people don't realize the word game that a lot of people play. But I think it's a major mistake for progressives to be repeating certain words and making fun of Bush with some of the words he says, like they make fun of how he says nuclear or how he says terror.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people realize that that's intentional, that every time progressives say something and repeat that, they're repeating the word nuclear and they're repeating the word terra, so that it's constantly being brought to the forefront, and again, trying to keep that feeling of be afraid, be very afraid.
Well, there's that, and there's a number of good reasons not to make fun of the way George Bush talks. And you won't, you know, if you're a longtime listener, you know, you know, 2 years we've been doing this program, I don't do that.
Oh no! I wasn't referring that you did.
I was referring
that other people.
But there are folks out there who do that, and I think that there's a number of good. I think you raised a really good point, Tony. And there's several good reasons not to do it. One is what you said, which is you're simply repeating his words and continuing the propaganda.
His message.
The second is that another part of the conservative. The conservative use of language that started with Newt Gingrich's word list and now, you know, Frank Luntz's instructions to conservatives on how to frame arguments and things and cause people to believe that Iraq and Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11, even though they didn't, stuff like that. That one of the arguments that the conservatives have made, which is really particularly ironic, is that liberals are an elite, that they are separate from everybody else. And, of course, well, I'll get into this right after the break. Tony, thanks for raising this topic. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Thank you for the show you're doing. I think it's great.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye. Thanks for listening. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental,
environmental and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on and welcome to WRVC in Huntington, West Virginia, the tri-state's home for news, sports, and talk radio. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast-to-coast, border-to-border, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can find it all, links to all of these various things from tomhartman.com. Including you can drop into our live chat room, which is right now full of folks having a live chat. Some fascinating discussions going on in there. Very often I learn a lot from what's going on while I'm on the air. And just go to tomhartman.com and click live chat. It takes you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. And click chat and boom, you're in there. It's a very straightforward process. 25 minutes past the hour. Tony in Maryland, you made a great point, and I want to follow up on this with this comment about the elites, but at the moment I've got number 12, cab driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line, and I know you're on a cell phone there, and I know that sometimes you disagree with me, number 12, which I really like, so I'm going to take your call before I answer Tony's comment. What's up?
Okay. Well, you know, I chuckle every time I hear a liberal call themselves and their political affiliates progressives. It reminds me of the old All in the Family episode where the two black guys broke into Archie's house, and then after a series of events, these two guys come to the conclusion. They go, "Well, you sir are a big ox," and then they're talking to me, and they go, "And you sir are a liberal,"
yeah.
And then I propose if liberals are going to rename themselves progressives, that conservatives should be renamed traditionalists or something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I suspect, number 12, that probably will come as the conservative agenda becomes more and more obvious to people in America. And it's certainly, you know, neocons are running away from that word. I mean, they have been writing these, you know, op-ed pieces saying, and there was actually one in the paper about 3 weeks ago suggesting that to call somebody a neocon was to be anti-Semitic. And, you know, so they're you know, people on the right are starting to run from the language. I think that, you know, the progressive movement of the 1880s, and if you go back and, you know, look at the history of the progressive movement, what it brought us direct election in the Senate, it brought us the women's rights movement, it brought us the election, you know, in 1919, the 20th Amendment that allowed women to vote, 1913, the direct election of the Senate, the 17th Amendment of the Constitution, and a lot of very positive changes in American society. It was the beginning of the labor movement in the United States. United States, the early beginnings of a let's rebuild the middle class here that had been wiped out right after the Civil War, and it was really an extraordinary thing, the progressive and the populist movement. And ironically, they split off from the Republican Party in 1872. I mean, the Republicans were the Reform Party, and then the Republican Party got all corrupted, and then the Democrats got all corrupted, and so the progressives and populists split off. And they kind of went away after the 1920s. And, you know, and Roosevelt came along in the New Deal and put in, the Wagner Act in 1935, brought back the middle class, or established a middle class in the United States, and took us out of the Great Depression. And so I think that there's a great tradition there with the progressives. And frankly, I think that there are some people who really think of themselves more as progressives in the old style of the populist and progressive movements. That is, they really are essentially populists, and others who think of themselves as liberals.
The way I usually hear it today is people who would be described as a modern liberal or Democrat/socialist, they describe themselves as progressives. And I don't really think the label matches. I'm familiar with what you said, and I really appreciate the history lesson there. I just think it's just like, I don't know, trying to put a sheet over your head and, camouflage yourself.
Well, there's some reality to that. There's some reality to that. I mean, the word liberal has been so demonized by right-wing radio,
Well, sure. I mean, George Washington was a liberal. He wasn't a liberal in the sense that we have it today.
Well, he called himself a liberal. He said, I hope America shall ever become more liberal.
Yes, and so basically the it was kind of a joke, because I basically think these terms are sort of kind of meaningless, the way that people are using them in a modern sense. If the liberals or socialist leaning Democrats are going to call themselves progressives, I think neocons or conservatives might as well just call themselves traditionalists, or just make up another word, and then we can have two labels for
dueling word wars. Dueling word wars. Okay, good suggestion, number 12. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
Small businesses and the self-employed in Kentucky are worried about a $40 million shortfall affecting one of the state-approved companies that handles workers' compensation insurance. AIK Comp, whose board of trustees is controlled by Kentucky's largest business trade association, recently announced that for the last several years it had offered insurance premiums at a loss in hopes of attracting more customers. However, the plan backfired, leading to the cash crunch, and now AIK wants to retroactively charge clients in order to make up for the money. The proposal would hit some 5,000 policyholders hard, many of whom say such a one-time blast could bankrupt them. Kentucky's Department of Workers' Claims held a hearing on AIK's conundrum this week and is expected to rule on its fee request sometime this month.
On Thursday, 37,000 Illinois government workers, represented by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, voted to ratify a new four-year contract with the state. Winning by a 4-1 margin, the labor agreement gives union workers gross salary increases every 6 months starting next year. However, under the new contract, workers will be required to pay more for health care. Unusual for most labor deals, beginning in the third year, the state health insurance plan will be expanded to let employees enroll their same-sex domestic partners for vision, dental, and health care benefits.
A federal court has applied brakes to the plan of some Amtrak employees to stage a walkout. Amtrak union members intended to walk off the job to protest what they have called the underfunding of the passenger railroad. A federal law bans rail workers from striking, but the employees argued that the law would not apply because they would be committing a political action, not striking over negotiations of pay or working conditions. The court concluded that the law prohibits any action that would have the consequences of a strike and noted that the Amtrak unions are currently negotiating with the railroad over new contracts. Congress gave Amtrak $600 million less than the $1.8 billion the railroad said it needed to meet operating costs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A.com is now the largest employer in Afghanistan. You heard that right. The online discount retailer Overstock.com now buys crafts from more than 1,500 Afghan peace workers who are paid about 70 cents for every dollar a customer spends on their handmade rugs, jewelry, and clothing items. Afghan craft workers for Overstock.com are estimated to make an average of about $50 per month. The previously largest employer in Afghanistan was a brick factory in Herat, which has about 400 on its payroll.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Just because there's arsenic in the water, and just because there's mercury in the air, just because the corporations run the White House,
oh yes,
don't mean he don't care.
No, he's a compassionate conservative.
Just because he's out of touch with people.
And on it goes. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
Only to the man upstairs.
Oh, my. There's some great bumper music today. 26 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Just to clean up a couple of things here, wrap up a few loose ends or whatever. Number 12. Is you know, you're so right about labels. I mean, here I am in the last election, the election of 2000. I voted for a Green. I voted for Ralph Nader. I voted for a Republican, Jim Jeffords, United States, my United States Senator. I voted for a Democrat, Pat Leahy. And I voted for the Progressive Party candidates for governor and attorney and lieutenant governor here in the state of Vermont. The Progressive Party carried about 30% of the vote in those races. And we don't have a Green Party here. I mean, we do, but it's very small. But we've got a very large Progressive Party. And it's why I call my program Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle, because these words increasingly are meaningless. What is a liberal? What does that mean? And this goes back to the point that Tony was making, that, you know, people who consider themselves at least, let's say, pro-environment, in favor of there being a middle class in America, in favor of there being the right to unionize, you know, whatever, you know, the issues of the left, that they shouldn't be making fun of the way George Bush talks. And the point that I the final point that I wanted to make about that is that one of the things in the process of systematically and intentionally using words very, very carefully to demonize people who reflect really what are the traditional values of this country and the founders of this country, and marginalize them and call them liberals. One of the straw man arguments that they have created is that there is this liberal elite. And yeah, you know, Barbara Streisand's a millionaire, but all of the corporate CEOs who are pulling down $20, $30, $50, $100, $200, $300, $500 million a year in salaries and bonuses and perks, who are all extremely concerned, they're not an elite. You know, as George W. Bush said when he was giving a speech to a group of wealthy patrons, he looked around and he says, an interesting group here. We have the haves and the have-mores. He said, some people call you the elite. I call you my base. And they all laughed. But it's true. I mean, you've got wealthy, you know, multimillionaire right-wing talk show hosts out there, you know, like Limbaugh and Hannity, and all this. That's interesting. Thank you, Louise. Tony just called back. You should have put her on the air. Tony just called back and just wanted to let number 12 know that she's a Republican who is fed up and not the liberal he labeled her as. So, number 12, Tony, I got, you know, clean up a little debate there. Anyhow, I think that making fun of the way Bush talks actually does make somebody seem like an elitist, you know, like a I'm smarter than you are kind of thing. And I think it also causes people to make a very dangerous mistake in assuming that this guy is really dumb. You know, I think it's very clear that he's dyslexic, that he has a difficult time grasping complex issues. He never did particularly well in school. He doesn't read well. He doesn't speak particularly well. But there are different types of intelligences, as Howard Gardner reminded us in his book, The Seven Intelligences. And his interpersonal intelligence is, in some ways, scary. His ability to get loyalty from people and to intimidate people. I mean, look what he did to Colin Powell. Colin Powell, the only guy in the whole administration who'd ever been in a war and seen people die. Dick Cheney had, during Vietnam, had other priorities, right? His student deferment, they stopped doing student deferments during the Vietnam War, but they continued the program where if you were married and you had children, you could get a deferment. 9 months to the day after they stopped the student deferments, which was what Dick Cheney had at that time, his wife gave birth. It's just, you know, strange stuff. Anyhow, but I digress. The Founding Fathers story. I want to get back to this. Let me just finish up this point that I was making about George W. I think that to underestimate him is as dangerous as to overestimate him. I think to not see the very clear and present danger that this guy and his administration, the ideology represents to democracy in the United States and around the world, is just as dangerous a thing, you know, to laugh at it as to get overly hysterical about it. I mean, I'm not into conspiracy theories by and large. I'm also not into just, you know, saying, hey, you know, the guy is just, I don't think he is. As Patrick Henry said at St. John's Church in Richmond, Virginia, on March 23rd, 1775, should I keep back my opinions at such a time? Through fear of giving offense, I should consider myself as guilty of treason towards my country. Or as Teddy Roosevelt said in the last year of World War I, when he was protesting the actions of the President of the United States, he himself, the former President of the United States, on May 7th, 1918, to announce that there must be no criticism of the president, our quote for the day, by the way, to announce that there must be no criticism of the president, or that we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Republican President Theodore Roosevelt. Patrick Henry, of course, this was his extraordinary speech. Mr. President, it is natural to man to indulge in the illusions of hope. We are apt to shut our eyes against a painful truth and listen to the song of that siren till she transforms us into beasts. Is this the part of wise men engaged in a great and arduous struggle for liberty? Are we disposed to be of the number of those who, having eyes, see not, and having ears, hear not? For my part, whatever anguish of the spirit it may cost, I am willing to know the whole truth. And then he points out, you want to know what somebody's going to do in the future? Look at what they've done in the past. He says, I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I know of no way of judging the future but by the past. Patrick Henry continues, let us not deceive ourselves, sir. These are the implements of war and subjugation, the last arguments to which kings resort. They tell us, sir, that we are weak, unable to cope with so formidable an adversary. But when shall we be stronger? Will it be the next week or the next year? Shall we acquire the means of effectual resistance by laying on our backs and hugging the delusive phantom of hope until our enemies shall have us bound hand and foot? The battle, sir, is not to the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. There is no retreat, but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. It is in vain, sir, Patrick Henry said, to extenuate the matter. Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. Patrick Henry, St. John's Church, Richmond, Virginia, March 23rd, 1775. And the document that today we celebrate, today, July 5th, the official celebration in the United States of July 4th, at least for those who, you know, work for a living or whatever, you know, who have to usually show up for work. I mean, here I am, I guess. Well, I'm celebrating. Here we are. The Declaration of Independence. The first document that was used to found a nation in the 7,000-year history of civilization that had the word happiness in it. This was no small thing, and this was no accident. When Thomas Jefferson wrote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." He was paraphrasing. John Locke's Second Treatise on Government, first published in 1690, suggested and gained wide circulation in the 1720s. 1724 was the big one. Suggested that the inalienable rights that nature conferred upon persons, which is how Jefferson actually originally wrote the Declaration, included life, liberty, and the right to own property. Now, why did Jefferson replace the right to own property with the right to happiness? You go back and you read his writings and that of many of the other founders, and you get it that they understood that there was a new phenomenon that they were noticing, that they were part of, that they had seen. Keep in mind, it wasn't until 1790, the next generation after the revolutionary generation, it wasn't until 1790 that the first person in North America acquired wealth equal to $1 million in today's money. And $1 million in today's money doesn't go that far, right, compared to, say, 30 years ago, 50 years ago. But the first American equivalent of a millionaire was in 1790. These guys who signed the Declaration of Independence were not the super rich that conservatives on the one hand would have you think, because they would like you to think that, oh, it's always been this way. The rich will take care of us, don't worry. And they weren't the super rich that the cynical left would have you think. Oh, it's rich white men doing this for rich white men. No. They were doing okay, although Thomas Jefferson died in bankruptcy. George Washington was broke most of his life, for example. They signed this extraordinary document that instantly, 56 men, that instantly caused them to be convicted by their very signatures of a crime, the penalty for which was hanging. when they wrote at the end of the Declaration, we mutually pledged to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. It was a simple statement of fact. The day they signed that document, each one legally became a traitor and was sentenced to death for treason. As Ben Franklin pointed out, they stood at the point of no return. He said, "Indeed, we must all hang together, otherwise we shall most assuredly hang separately." Rhode Island Stephen Hopkins said to his friend William Ellery, who also signed the Declaration, "My hand trembles, but my heart doesn't." But Benjamin Harrison of Virginia, who weighed about 300 pounds, commented to Massachusetts' Eldridge Gerry, a short, thin man, "With me, the hanging will be over in a minute, but you will be dancing on air an hour after I'm gone." John Hancock was the first to sign, and he signed very large. So, he said, that the king could read his name without his glasses and double the reward that was already on Hancock's head, the 500-pound reward that was already on his head. Just 6 months later, John Hancock would lose his newborn daughter to complications of childbirth arising from his wife's fleeing the oncoming British Army. Although he was wealthy by the standards of the day, he left no dynasty, no foundations. Really wasn't until the 1880s that real mind-boggling wealth started to rise up in the United States. Thomas Nelson of Virginia signed the Declaration, joined George Washington in the war. He had to flee his home. 100%, every single one of the signers of the Declaration had to flee their homes. Including Jefferson. When Nelson, however, was with George Washington chasing British General Cornwallis, Cornwallis had taken Nelson's own home as his headquarters, and Nelson himself asked Washington to fire cannons at his own home. The house was destroyed, and after the war, Nelson, unable to repay loans he'd taken out against it to help finance the revolution, lost his property and died in poverty at the age of 50. Signers William Ellery of Rhode Island lost everything, as did Virginia's Carter Braxton and Benjamin Harrison, Pennsylvania's George Clymer, New York's Philip Livingston, Georgia's Lyman Hall, New Jersey's Francis Hopkinson. New Jersey farmer John Hart's wife died shortly after he signed the Declaration, and his 13 children were scattered among sympathetic families to hide them from the British and the conservative loyalists. He never saw them again. He died alone and racked with grief 3 years later. Altogether, 17 of the signers were wiped out by the war they declared. Do we have the courage to continue in the spirit of 1776, hold that vision of America that they held? It's Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights.
Americans. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Daddy, who's Pat Riot?
Pat Riot? I never heard of him.
Is he an actor?
What do you mean, honey?
Well, it says here the Pat Riot Act is good for our country.
Oh. No. It's a patriot. Patriot. It means loving our country.
What's a Patriot Act like?
The Patriot Act lets the government search for terrorists, bad guys who might want to hurt us.
Us?
No, not you or me, don't worry. But some Americans, I suppose, like when the buildings fell down.
But does the Patriot Act think we're terrorists?
Of course not, honey. Why?
Well, I thought it said that some people get together because they disagree with the government. That could be something terrorism. Here, how do you pronounce that, Daddy?
Domestic terrorism. Lawful assembly is domestic terrorism? Can't say that. Huh. I guess it does.
What's that mean?
Well, I suppose it could mean that meeting that your teacher went to about repealing the Patriot Act could be thought of as domestic terrorism.
Hey, I've got it. What if we make it illegal to give homework and make it illegal for teachers and parents to meet to protest not giving homework?
Come on, honey.
Well, it's kind of the same thing, isn't it? My teacher's not a terrorist.
No, I don't think so.
Are we really free if we're being watched all the time? Really?
Well, it may not seem like it, but...
Then why? People can't love our country if they want to take our freedoms away, can they?
I don't know.
Sounds like we ought to go to the next repeal meeting, Daddy.
Oh, no. Well, maybe. I don't know.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I've heard that other countries are down on the U.S., a land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai. I refuse to live that way.
Oh, no, I want my SUV.
And I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103. And I'll gladly park so close to you, when you pull out, you can't see. No, I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV.
And welcome back. 3 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. The Declaration of Independence was signed on July 4th, 1776. We celebrate that today, July 5th. 2004, and 228 years later or thereabouts, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them to under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, wrote Thomas Jefferson, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. See, today we do this in the ballot box. Such has been the safe, patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. And then he says, to prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world, because they understood preemptive war is something that nations don't do. The Romans did it. The Greeks did it. They were viewed as barbarians for doing it. Hitler did it. Preemptive war is something you don't do. So they have this bill of particulars, this list of the crimes of the third George to rule England. Compare them with what the third George to rule America is now doing. He has refused his assent to laws. We have George Bush, who signed a document in March of 2003 saying that he was independent of the law. He could not be prosecuted under the War Crimes Act of the United States or under the Geneva Conventions. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance. Look at, what Tom DeLay is doing in the House. It's really quite remarkable. We're out of time here, but I encourage you to read the Declaration of Independence. It'll chill you. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music and Shelby for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics, for bringing us along. Thanks to Jay for producing and performing our theme music. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. And thanks to you for listening. See you here tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America.